Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Mark Reinfeld. Thanks for being with us, Mark.
Hey, guys, it's wonderful to be back with y'all.
Mark, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got involved in veganism?
Sure. It was in about 1990, I was on a kibbutz in Israel, and I started connecting with animals in a way that I hadn't before and just started feeling towards them, seeing baby cows and baby chicks, just connecting the same way with them as I did with my pets. So that started the vegan journey.
Were you surprised to learn about how the way animals were treated and making food?
Yes. Well, initially it was just, I think my heart just opened to compassion, and I wasn't aware of any of the factory farming. Just the idea of taking an innocent life was what motivated me. I didn't want to participate in that. And then I learned more about factory farming and even dairy and egg production, so that solidified the vegan part of my journey.
You know, as I understand it, Israel is one of the leading countries in veganism.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of different people have different theories as to why that's the effect. That some people say because of their experience with the Holocaust, that there's more of a sensitivity when they see millions of beings crammed into, you know, areas. I think it triggers something in a collective conscious there.
And yet many people in the U.S. don't like it when we vegans compare the Holocaust to animal suffering.
Yes, it's definitely a touchy topic. You know, I think just letting people draw their own conclusions once they are provided with the facts and the information, that's usually how I like to go.
We had you on the show years ago to discuss your 30-minute vegan series, and you know, you have a new cookbook out now, or new book out now. It's called Healing the Vegan Way. How did you switch into cooking, and what put you on the path to being a chef as opposed to other means of activism?
Interesting. Well, I used to definitely be much more of an in-your-face activist, and then I'd always loved cooking as a child, and started working in a natural food store in San Diego in the mid-90s, and that's when I really started experimenting with plant-based cuisine. And just, I think what impacted me the most was seeing how you could make food for people, and if it tasted really good, they didn't care whether it was vegan or not. And so that kind of light bulb went off in my head, and I do look at my whole culinary career as a form of activism, mm-hmm. which I like to call food activism, and just emphasizing the fact that as much information as we have about the benefits of a vegan lifestyle, if the food doesn't taste good, we're not really going to move things forward. So that's why I devote a lot of my energy towards teaching others. I do workshops and trainings internationally, and as well as the cookbooks, just to show people how they can prepare the food to taste like on a world-class level. So when they feed people, it's more appealing. The lifestyle becomes more appealing.
You know, I agree with you completely. I've discovered over the last few years that sharing and planning vegan dinners and giving cooking classes is one of the best forms of activism.
That echoes my sentiment exactly.
Well, you know, in this new book, Healing the Vegan Way, it's more along the lines of how to eat for our health. And maybe we can talk a little bit about, most of us just forget about the main health problems that are affecting this country, you know, diabetes, obesity, heart disease. I think the nice thing about your book is it really says that this isn't really some elusive virus. It's frankly just something that we do every single day. You know, what inspired you to focus more on the healing portion of cooking?
That's a great question. Well, I've always been interested in the healing qualities of foods. When I started my culinary career, I just was fascinated by that. Like eating a sweet potato could have health benefits. You know, like food is the medicine, that awareness. And I like to say when people ask, like, why do you become vegan, it's usually one of three main reasons, like, that I look at as three different doors that go into the same room. So one is the health or medical, one is environmental or political or sustainability issues, one is ethical or spiritual, mm-hmm. animal rights issues. And so I personally went through the last door. But once you get into the room, you learn about the other reasons. And so in the years of doing my classes all over the world, I found most people are coming in through the health or medical door, especially as like baby boomers, or they're starting to become more concerned with their health issues. So I really wanted to address that aspect of the vegan journey with that book, and that's why I incorporated expert testimonials from some of the leading plant-based doctors and dietitians, just really demonstrating that these are preventable diseases. And when you look at the cost of these diseases, not just on like a human suffering scale, but also on a social scale, that a lot of what we call the healthcare crisis, I think, could be alleviated as well through making this shift.
Yeah, and it's just incredible the number of people that would rather take a pill than change their diet. We just were watching Plant Pure Nation at the Veg Society this past weekend, and in the movie they were talking about how many medications the average American takes, and it was an incredible number of pills. And I personally have met lots of people and have said, well, you know, did you know if you change your diet, it would help with your high blood pressure or with this or that? And they're like, oh, I'll just take my Lipitor. You
know? Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, I think the education component is crucial, and people are at their own place in their journey. And eventually I think the light bulb will go off when they see the connection.
You know, there's also another trend in young people that are not doing it for health reasons, but it seems to be tied to social media, that they're coming into it for animal rights reasons, which is a great thing to see.
Yes, especially, I mean, that's how I entered into it. So to me, it's encouraging to see that trend. And we're probably preaching to the choir, the four of us here, but I do strongly feel this is like the way of the future, especially when you take into account the sustainability factor and also the mounting evidence of the health benefits. To me, this is the future of food.
Right. And you know, speaking of health benefits, what are some of the, you know, your book dives into some of the powerhouse foods that are really, great for our health for a variety of reasons. Maybe we can talk a little bit about some of those and what their benefits are.
Well, I like to encourage people, like on some level, all plants are superfoods. All plants have their own unique phytonutrient breakdowns, which serve a very specific purpose in our body. So narrowing it down, generally people use the term of superfood, so it looks at nutrient density, where you're packing the most nutrients in the smallest amount of food. And so each type of food group has their own shining star. So I encourage people to eat like get a rainbow of color in their diet, so focusing on fresh fruits and vegetables, especially the green leafy vegetables like kale or collards, or the cruciferous cabbage family vegetables, the berries also, just even at your supermarket, blueberries are good. If you get more into like goji berries and acai or more esoteric, like you're not going to find that so much at a major food market, but blueberries is good fruit. And nuts and seeds as protein sources, like almonds and sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds. In the grain category, like quinoa is a favorite, although it's actually a seed. So each subgroup has its own shining stars.
I notice on the cover of your book, all the vegetables pictured are green leafies.
Interesting. Yeah, that was I did a double take when they came up with that, and I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on the cover. I think those are, like, the greens are definitely the big healing foods for us.
Right. I think for most people, and maybe it's just an obvious solution, but we just, for whatever reason, many people choose not to do it. But, you know, I think what also people like to do is they'll look for some other study that says, hey, it's a good idea to eat bacon every day this every day. So how do we, with all the conflicting nutritional theories out there, you know, how do we decide which foods, you know, really are the best for us?
Another great question. Like, I like to address that. You always need to look at who's funding the study. So, like, say, like, coconut oil is bad for you, brought to you by the Olive Oil Foundation or something, you know, like you have to look to see, or maybe the Olive Oil Foundation will form another group called like the Tropical Institute, and then the Tropical Institute will come out with the study. So it kind of is a dizzying maze of conflicting theories. For me, I think you can argue till the end of time about which is the healthiest diet for people. Everyone's kind of entrenched in their positions. I mean, for me, obviously, I feel a plant-based diet is the optimal diet for humans. I feel as long as we can show that it's as healthy as the other diet theories, which clearly it is, then once you take into account the other factors, there's actually no comparison. So there's the sustainability factor, and also if we want to bring more, you know, loving kindness into our world, that's where the plant-based diet really, I think, like leads the pack.
Right. I have a question. You know, a lot of people have a hard time getting over the salad thing. They think if you're vegetarian or vegan, you know, and we're talking here about greens, they see green and they think, oh, God, I'll never be full on salad. I'm not going to, you know, survive on salad alone. There's no way I can do it. How do we break that barrier so people will get out there and try some of these greens in some of the fabulous ways you've highlighted in your book?
Oh, good. Well, so it's interesting because when people ask, how do I get started, I usually say just get more creative with your salads. So don't feel limited to, like, some parts of the country. Probably it's the iceberg lettuce, tomato, and cucumber. And just to get more creative and adventurous in the produce section for the salads. In general, though, what I like to recommend is that people make a gentle transition towards this. So, I mean, unless you get the 911 from the doctor, which a lot of people do, and they have to. I've had students who, he was a fireman for 30 years. He found out by his doctor he had diabetes. He called his wife. He read the China study, called his wife, and said, we're going vegan, and then they never turned back, and now he's totally fine. Unless you're in that category, if you have a bacon double cheeseburger for dinner one night and you have a sprout salad the next night, you're not going to be satisfied. So the goal, I think, is you have to transition in a way where you're still getting the flavors and textures and sense of satiation that you get from an animal product with plants, which, so you can look at the hardier foods. And, like, to me, I think the analog products play an important role in that. So if there are now, you're probably aware, like the vegan cheese scene is exploding.
Yeah.
There's vegan butcher shops opening up. There's a lot of amazing products that they didn't have 20 years ago when I got started, or even 10 years ago. So now you can make yourself a, you know, vegan bacon cheeseburger, and it, to me, it takes the edge off if you have that craving.
Right.
Back when I went vegetarian almost 40 years ago, the only meat analogs available were from Loma Linda, the Seventh-day Adventist, and hot dogs and hamburgers came in a can.
Wow.
Sounds pretty gross.
Yeah, things have really improved. They've really,
like,
taken off.
CVP probably was the only.
Yeah.
I was going to just follow up on your comment about, you know, having to transition, because you see a lot of books out like, you know, vegan before 5 or something like this, or, you know, you can decrease your environmental footprint and animal suffering by taking a vegan diet up until dinner time, and then you can eat whatever you want. But, you know, I think your comment's really a good one. If people do that, I don't think they're ever going to make the full transition because they're going to be wanting that heavier caloric content at night that they've been getting used to by going vegan all day.
Right.
And I think, you know, what's great about your book, too, is it does, you know, it moves from salads, but also to those more what people would traditionally think of as meatier dishes. You know, you have like the wasabi garlic twice baked potatoes. You have tempeh fajitas. You have the spaghetti squash. You know, so there are foods that are not just the salad that people can eat that they forget about. You know, you have a sloppy Joe recipe. You have a vegan meatloaf. There's just so many things that people can eat that are not salad.
Yeah, and I like to, because I see things on a spectrum, and so I like providing the what I would call like the heavier comfort foods, like there's a gravy and like a loaf, a holiday loaf, and then the lighter raw foods, which there's also a growing body of evidence that the more uncooked fresh fruits and vegetables we have, you know, we're getting important nutrients through that. So I like providing the full spectrum.
Almost a decade ago, we had a guest on this show that advocated eating mostly leaves. And at the time, I thought he was a nut. Uh-huh. But I've come around to think that I don't eat enough salad.
That's funny. That's interesting. Wow.
But what I found is you can cook salads. I love wilted lettuce and, of course, cooked spinach. But when you cook leafy greens, it makes them more dense and more filling.
Yes, I advocate a combination of cooked and raw, and I think it's different person to person and season to season as well, like, and looking at your, you know, your location too. I mean, I know there are raw food restaurants in Alaska. I think everyone's body type is different, and I would everyone has to, I think, do the experiment on themselves to see what the best ratio is.
Well, speaking of experimenting, I think for many of us, what it comes down to is having your kitchen prepared for this transition and being ready to cook the right vegan way when you're ready. So what are some of the things that, you know, we should be doing to start to get our kitchen ready?
I would say, like, you want to make it an inviting experience. So start building, find a knife that you're really comfortable with, find a cutting board that you really like, and those are two basics. If you have a really nice sharp knife and a beautiful bamboo cutting board, it's going to be more appealing than like a dull knife on a glass cutting board, like things like that. And then you could really just initially get by just with like a knife and a cutting board. Then if you want to build your equipment up, you could start with a blender, which will allow you to make smoothies and dressings and sauces, and then just keep building as your means allow. You could get, you know, the more gadgets you get that you enjoy, the more fun it's going to be. I encourage people to create like a clean, uncluttered space in the kitchen so it's like an enjoyable experience, like whether there's you have flowers or play music, something that makes you feel good about being in the kitchen. And then as far as ingredients, you want to start building a core base of like ingredients that you have in your rotation that are these superfoods. So having like quinoa or some like a favorite rice, different legumes to use, just to have that on hand. I also encourage people to create spice blends, so you can have a little Mexican blend, an Italian blend, Ethiopian, Moroccan, depending on how adventurous you want to get. And then really with the flick of the hand, you can create like an Ethiopian quinoa pilaf or a Moroccan quinoa pilaf just by changing the spice blend. Mm.
Mark, you also do training workshops and organize international retreats in vegan cuisine. Where can our listeners go to learn more about Healing the Vegan Way and also all your other various work?
They could go to veganfusion.com, which is the website, and I send out a free newsletter with recipes and information on events and current events. I do travel quite a bit, and I also have a certification process where I train teachers on how to conduct cooking classes in their community. Mm. So I have Vegan Fusion certified trainers who offer classes in other locations as well. And all of that info is on the website, veganfusion.com.
I'm certainly signing up.
Please do.
We've been talking with award-winning author and celebrated chef, Mark Reinfeldt. Thanks for being with us, Mark.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.